you. The call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. Welcome to everybody on the call. This is Chuck, and Aubrey will be on shortly, I think. So I thought rather than waste any more time in silence mode here that we should go ahead and start. And Glenn, could you go ahead and do the roll call while we're waiting for Aubrey?
Yes, I'll do that, Chuck. We have on the call Mike Rodenbach.
Yes.
Saeed Jamil.
Here.
I see Avery has just joined the call. Thank
My
you.
Apologies.
Philip Shepherd has sent his apologies. He can't be at the meeting. Uta Decker.
Yes.
Christina Rosette.
Yes.
Cyril Schuer.
Yes.
Tony Holmes has sent his apologies. He can't be at the meeting. Tony Harris. Tony
yes,
Harris.
I'm here.
Greg Ruth. Mary Wong. William Drake. Carlos Souza.
Here.
Adrian Kinderis. Tim Ruiz.
Tim is here, and Adrian won't be able to make it today, I believe.
Stefan van Schelder. I believe he might be a bit late. Jordi Iparagvira will also be a bit late. He's let me know. Chuck Gomes.
Here.
Edmund Chan.
Here.
Terry Davis.
Here.
Avery Doria.
Here.
And Olga Gavelli is absent and sends her apologies. For the liaisons, we have Han Chuan, who
Hi.
Is the CCNSO observer, and Alan Greenberg,
here.
The ALAC liaison. And for staff, we have Kurt Pritz, Rob Hogarth, Marika Koenigs, Liz Gaster, Julie Headland, and have I left off anybody for staff?
Hi, I'm Jonathan, as you're joining.
And Margie.
Margie, you were one of the first ones. Hi, Jordi, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
And I think that's all, thank you.
And Aubrey, we do have a quorum. All constituencies are represented, and I think we're well above a quorum now. So, it's all yours.
Okay, thanks. And again, apologies. I had it all nicely written down for 11 o'clock and was nice and relaxed making my preparations for the meeting. And then I got the phone call telling me how wrong I was. So I apologize. At this point, is there anyone that needs to update a statement of interest? I don't believe we had any in the last week. Just a reminder for everyone to do so. If conditions change, send it in, and then let us know. To review and amend the agenda. One item, we don't have a set of minutes that went out to people yet to approve for 16 April, so that will not happen. Are there any other questions or issues about the agenda?
Let me just make a comment on the minutes, Aubrey. I want to make clear that Glenn did send those out to Aubrey and I. We just haven't had time to do a first review before distributing them to everybody, so this is not Glenn's responsibility.
No, this is definitely you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I should have said that. Sorry, Glenn. Okay. Any other issues on the agenda? On the CCNSO liaison update, and I'm looking at the wiki, which is 8-2. Obviously, she's here. But she did she send in something to the list? I'm trying to remember. I saw something.
Yes, she did.
She did. Okay, she sent in something to the list. So if we have any questions on that, we probably should address them on the list, and I won't go through it in the meeting. Any other issues about the agenda? In which case, we'll get started. The first item is the post-exploration domain name recovery policy development process PDP decision, which has been deferred from several meetings. There is a motion, and that motion has had friendly amendments. I'm not sure if the friendly amendment has actually been edited in. Has it been? Let me check.
Yes, it has, Avery.
So, and as the proposed motion, as it reads now, includes the amendment. Okay.
Avery, it's Alan. We never decided that was friendly or not.
She did, I think.
Basically, I sent down a message.
If you'd like my opinion, I will give it.
Okay, sure. Let me go on.
Okay.
I did send out a message to the list, asking if there was any objection to accepting it as a friendly amendment.
I admit I saw that reference to the notice today.
And I believe that I am taking silence as assent to that question. But Alan, if you have a different view, please.
I do, and I'm sorry I didn't respond to that message. I didn't notice it as it flew by originally, and I just noticed the reference
right
to it today
in the
motions. My apologies. I don't consider it friendly for two reasons. Number one, the proposed motion includes the types of outcomes, because at the time it was written, there was some worry that council would later on come back and say the working group is trying to widen its scope by adding different types of outcomes. Staff has since clarified that all these types of outcomes are valid outcomes of a PDP process. So I could live with dropping it. The proposed amendment, however, explicitly restricts the type of output that is allowed. Specifically, it says best practices and consensus policy, with no comment on either recommendations for staff for changes in how the policies are enforced and monitored, or the possibility of suggesting that RAA provisions be changed. Obviously, that doesn't change them, but it says put them on the table. So removing those two, I think, explicitly restricts the PDP process, and I think would significantly change the outcome. So I don't consider that friendly.
Okay. Now, I guess in terms of the council considering it friendly, it's set to have Chuck and I. Now, one of the things I want to bring up, although that's why I did go back to the working group, I'd like to hear some discussion on this. The one thing I'd like to point out is that any charter, basically, once it goes to a working group and the working group is formed, etc., if they believe there's a necessity to have that charter altered, they can initiate a negotiation with the council to amend the charter. So I don't know that it's quite as absolutely limiting as you're indicating.
Well, except the council has taken a pretty strong view recently that working groups deciding to widen their scope is not a good thing.
Well,
could I get in the queue?
Okay, Chuck, anyone else wish to be in the queue?
Tim?
Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Okay, two things. First of all, I'm confused about your last statement, Alan, that council's taken a dim view of widening scope. My understanding is that at any time that a working group thinks that their scope needs to be modified, all they have to do is come back to the council for consideration. Secondly, I don't understand exactly, maybe I need you to be clear again, what you think is missing in this motion that couldn't be done, because what I heard you say could have been handled under best practices. So could you clarify for me what you think this motion doesn't allow for that you think it should?
Well, as an example, identifying that ICANN's staff should make very explicit changes in how they monitor consensus policies, I don't think would be called best practices. Best practices is something you're recommending for people you have no control over, whereas the council making a recommendation to the board could be a binding thing. It's not a best practices issue.
Have control over staff.
Pardon me?
I'm not sure we have control over
staff. No, but the board
staff
does if they decide to agree.
So what you're suggesting is that we make a policy recommendation regarding the possibility of making a policy recommendation on how staff monitors consensus policies? Is that what you think?
That is what I think might come out of this, and staff has agreed that this is a valid outcome of a PDP.
Okay.
Okay, Tim.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to some degree, I guess I do think that we should give some consideration to trying to keep scope of those working groups contained to some extent. I mean, otherwise, we run the risk of these of the working groups, you know, running on and on or getting skewed off into lengthy discussions that may not actually lead to anything productive. And the RAA changes is one of those areas where I think it could easily happen. If we're going to form a working group that where we feel it could be a specific outcome could specifically be a consensus policy or a best practice, you know, that's one thing. But if that working group's also going to have a wide enough scope that they can begin discussing the RAA as a whole, you know, items outside of the ticket fence, et cetera, et cetera, I just see that, you know, the discussions going all over the map, going on, and not really ever coming to some kind of productive conclusion. So if that's the, you know, the goal is to that review the RAA and perhaps that there's changes there that could be made to address the problem or the issue, and that I feel that should be something separate. And in fact, that's what we're doing. We've got a group that we're going to be forming, hopefully sooner than later, to discuss further changes to the RAA. And I suppose there's nothing saying that this working group couldn't come to the conclusion that, well, you know, a consensus policy doesn't make sense. It's really not a best practice that makes sense. But, you know, here's some areas of the RAA that we think could be looked at, and that could be mentioned in the report. And that could become part of what this other group that's looking at the RAA could perhaps pick up and then pursue. But I just see that, you know, trying to consider RAA changes as a completely different type of work and a different issue than, you know, a typical policy development process that's looking at, especially if we're talking about something that could be a consensus policy, which, of course, is in and of itself, for all practical purposes, a change to the RAA. It's just as binding. So that's my concern, and I understand that staff feels, well, yeah, those things could all be there. I just think that we're opening up a can of worms if we go that way with these working groups.
Okay, thank you.
Avery, could you put me in the queue?
Certainly. Anyone else? One thing I did want to point out is looking back, I believe that I already accepted it as a friendly amendment. Now, we can amend it again if need be, but I think at this point, by just dialogue on the list, I had already accepted it as a friendly amendment. That doesn't mean we can't keep discussing it. Alan?
Tim said he's worried about increasing the scope. I think the scope, that is what this is looking at, is very tightly restricted by repeating the outcomes of the issues report. What I'm attempting to say is not that the scope be widened, but the possible outcomes be widened. Now, clearly, if this group, to use the example that Tim was looking at, identifies something in the RAA that needs to be changed, it's going to have to go through an RAA process, and it may well, if the timing is right, go into this new group. You know, if the post-expiry working group takes 4 years, it'll go into some follow-on. Clearly, it's not in a position to negotiate with registrars to change RAA provisions that are outside of the picket fence. But if this group is studying the problem, it should be allowed to identify what the potential solutions are. Remember, we're looking at a problem which council has worked on several times before, both in PDP processes and outside the PDP process, and has not been successful because they have limited themselves to formal policy or best practices which didn't address the problem. So it's a complex problem, and I believe if it's going to be addressed and we're not wasting time, that we shouldn't be limiting what the working group does. And I'm not saying not limit it in what it's looking at. That's very tightly limited.
So what are you suggesting, that one should say something other than best practices as well as or instead of recommendations for consensus policy?
Well, the sentence that Tim is removing in that change, or that you are removing if you accept that, is the one that it says the charter is charged with carrying out this PDP and should include a mandate to consider consensus policy recommendations, as well as recommendations regarding best practices, ICANN compliance obligations, and possible RAA changes, all associated.
That's the sentence that's being removed.
That's the one that's being removed. But
right, and what's there now is that it should consider recommendations for best practices as well as
consensus.
Instead of recommendations for consensus policy.
It is removing the recommendations on compliance issues, compliance obligations, and possible RAA changes.
This is Tim. Can I get in the queue? Because I don't get
that. Anyone else that would like to get in it?
Yeah, I reached Christina. Can you put me in?
Okay, certainly, Christina. Yes, Tim.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't understand the part about compliance with how what's being reworded here that affects their ability to look. In fact, it specifically says in II, to inform its work, it should pursue the availability of further information from ICANN compliance staff to understand how current RAA provisions and consensus policies regarding deletion auto renewal and recovery of domain names during the RGP are enforced. So there's a specific element there that talks about looking at the compliance issue. The only other thing I want to say, though, is that if there's such a concern here that history has shown a consensus policy can't resolve this issue, then why are we even going here? Then let's just go straight to with the RAA group that's already going to be looking at those issues.
Add me to the queue, please, Aubrey.
And me too, back. So.
Okay. That's Christina, Chuck, and then Alan again. Chuck, and then Alan. Okay, Christina.
And I apologize, as I was not on the last call, so if this is covered, then, again, my apologies. I made it through part of the recording. I guess what I'm not clear on is, just following up a little bit on Tim's point, is that given that the working group is being explicitly instructed to look, to consult with compliance staff as to how existing policies are enforced, I'm having difficulty understanding why, in that case, it wouldn't make sense to include recommendations regarding stricter enforcement of existing compliance policies as a possible outcome.
Okay.
You know, I didn't intend with this amendment to say that wasn't possible. I didn't mean to restrict that or didn't intend that at all. So.
Yeah, I don't see how it restricts it. I don't understand.
Well, then, in that case, can't we perhaps solve Alan's concern by making the appropriate amendment to little I?
And which would say?
That it should consider recommendations for best practices, comma, recommendations for enforcement of existing consensus policies, comma, and or recommendations for consensus policies. Would that solve everybody's problem?
I don't think so, but I'll speak when I get my turn.
Okay, thank you. Chuck?
Yes, I don't understand why in the original part of the motion it said recommending changes to the RAA. That seems to me to go beyond the scope of this particular PDP. If there is a consistent policy recommended, that registrars would have to comply with that, so you don't need any changes to the RAA. So I think that extends the scope too far, and I don't think it's needed. And secondly, a general comment, I sure think we're complicating this thing.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
I first of all will reiterate what Christina said. To put in the motion that we're allowed to talk to staff and hear what goes on, but not allowed to suggest that they change what they do, I don't think makes any sense. In regard to Chuck's question, I'll give you the example I gave last time. Right now, compliance staff checks what registrars do, but does not check what resellers do. I believe that's one of the problems in this whole thing, in that there is no ability of ICANN to check. Now, that so an outcome of this would be that ICANN staff must look at what resellers do. They can't just take it on faith that all resellers are acting in good faith. To do that, they will likely need a change in the RAA, which says registrars must tell ICANN who the resellers are, otherwise they can't independently audit. That's an example of a change in the RAA which might be required to allow this to be done.
But if a consensus policy was passed in that regard, then that would be covered. No change in the RAA.
Registrars telling ICANN who their resellers are is not within the picket fence.
What?
This is Tim. I'd like back in the queue.
Stefan as well, please, Avery.
Okay. I'm at Tim. I've got Stefan.
Yes, I'm just giving those examples that might come out of it,
right.
But it's the one that I think shows all the aspects.
Okay. This is the issue that I have, is that the work that we're giving the working group. I mean, if the charter is to see if a consensus policy can be developed, or a best practice, some advice about compliance to existing policies or requirements. That's one thing. If we don't feel that there's either existing policy can be better enforced or a consensus policy that can be put in place to solve it, then we have a whole different issue, and in my mind, it's a different type of work, and it should be pursued separately. It shouldn't be part of this working group. Otherwise, we're going to end up with some potentially unending debate, discussion that's not going to result in anything that can actually be actionable. And I don't see the point in that. So I just think we need to have some kind of clear idea up front of what this working group is going to pursue. That doesn't mean it's the end of it if they can't come to a conclusion, that something else can go on. But if it's something like, debating or negotiating over what other changes could be done to the RAA to make things better, that's a whole other type of work, and I don't think that should be tied into the typical policy development processes that we normally do here within working groups. I think it's a bad idea.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. I add myself briefly after Stefan.
Thanks, Avery. Yeah, I think what everyone is basically saying here is be careful. We need to have a very strictly defined scope for the work that's being considered here, and I think the example that's just been given of what do we do with regards to resellers is a very clear example of how we might overstep the mark and go in a direction that, to put it mildly, could be dangerous or at least extremely difficult to follow. I mean, if we start talking about obligations made to contracted parties to list all their business partners, where is it going to stop, and are we in scope?
Yes. Putting myself in. Basically, the point I want to bring out again is that what the conversation has shown is that if we put it in now as it had been, it's way too wide a leniency for adding new topics. I think the provision that says after two happens and they have been informed on, for example, the compliance step, at that point, they have the information to use, and if after it they come to it and say, we really think that on this specific issue we would like to do further work, I think that on a specific issue it comes back to the council and the council decides on that particular extension of the scope. But otherwise, just on the practical point of a working group having carte blanche to go appear at anything that seems appropriate to it, the working group will not terminate. So I'm inclined to continue accepting the friendly amendment and not actually add more to it. Does anyone else want to speak, or is any objection to taking a vote at this point? No objection to taking a vote. No one else wants to be in the queue. Now, on this one, basically, as this is a vote for a PDP process, it is a vote that will have the absentee ballot rule applied, and I think I'll leave it at the bylaws 2 days, neither shortening nor extending it, unless anyone has a reason why it should be either shortened or extended. Okay, then. I'll leave it at the at that. And I guess at this point, if there's no objection, Glenn, could you call a roll on the vote?
Yes, I will, Avery. Thank you. Mike Rodenbach.
Yes, in favor.
Said Jamil. Said.
Yes, in favor. Sorry, thank you.
Uta Deka?
Yes, in favor.
Christina Rosette?
Yes, in favor.
Shiru Chua? I see Cyril is...
dropped off.
Has dropped off, yes. Tony Harris?
Yes, in favor.
William Drake?
Yes.
Carlos Souza?
Yes.
Tim Ruiz?
Yes, in favor.
Stefan Van Gelder?
Yep.
Jordi Pereira?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Edmund Chun?
Yes.
Terry Davis?
Yes.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
So we have... we have 19 votes in favor. We should actually have 20 votes in favor.
Cyril was cut Cyril off just now, and I'm back in again.
Oh,
so
back
I'm in
again.
Favor.
Cyril,
yes.
Yes, you're in favor. So we have 20 votes in favor, and the absentee ballots will be sent to the council members absent.
Okay, thank you. And then we will have to get started afterwards on following. So, okay, moving on to item 5, which was the GAC position paper on geographic names that was recently forwarded to the list. Someone from the staff was going to speak to that. Was that Kurt? Or was that Denise? I wasn't sure.
Kurt, Denise is not going to be able to
speak
us.
To it.
Aubrey, this is Kurt. I didn't quite hear you.
Basically, we're at the issue of the GAC position on geographic names.
Right.
And at the pre-meeting, it spoke about someone from the staff giving us an overview of that from the staff-neutral perspective as opposed to any of us trying to do it. And Denise's name was given, your name was given, and I'm not sure who we settled on doing it.
I can give an update that Denise can augment.
Yeah, Denise will not be able to make a call, by the way.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, okay. So, yeah, if you could.
So then, the board discussion in Mexico City involves several aspects of geographic names, and the resolution that came out of that and the discussion indicated that there seemed to be satisfactory compromise regarding geographic names, allocation of geographic place names at the top level, but that there wasn't that consensus at the second level, and asked the GAC to prepare a set of reports on this. And those reports, in order to keep pace with the implementation timeline, The board asked the GAC to issue a preliminary report on April 24th, I think, and a final report on May 24th. I think I have those dates right, but there might be plus or minus a day or so. And as a precursor to those reports, the board asked the staff to write a letter to the GAC requesting the reports and stating the current state of play. So the all those things have been posted. Staff wrote a letter to the GAC saying exactly what the board discussion described. That is that there seems to be a compromise at the top level that's workable in the current version of the applicant guidebook, and asked the GAC to explore if there are protections required at the second level. The GAC responded with a preliminary report that you see that was posted on the 24th of April. All this stuff is happening in an extremely tight timeline. So there's a lot of work being done on all these groups that are preparing these interim reports. And then, so then the question is, you know, what next in this period of between the preliminary report and the final report that they have?
Yeah, well, I guess there's two things. One is, as I understand it, if we or anyone else wishes to get comments in to the GAC for them to consider them, those comments need to get in the next couple of days. And I'm also wondering if there's someone, whether you or someone else from the staff is sort of prepared to give a quick summary of what it is they are suggesting for the second level. Hello? Am I alone on this? Okay, there are other people here.
Well, we hear you.
Okay. Have we lost Kurt?
Yeah, I think we lost Kurt.
Are you able to jump in, Liz, or?
Not really.
Aubrey, aren't they? I mean,
right.
To a large extent, aren't they really? Isn't the GAC really asking for the same thing at the second level as they have at the top level?
Essentially, yes.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, basically, they are. So then the question becomes, I mean, if everyone at the council is fine in terms of understanding what it is they're asking for, the question becomes, do we wish to respond in the next couple of days?
Kurt's back.
Okay, hi, Kurt.
I'm so sorry.
Right, the question...
So,
yeah, okay, go ahead.
You're on it. So the question is whether, you know, so the letter was sent to the chairs of the SOs and ACs, and said that they wish to comment in some way. And so necessarily, it's all on a very short time frame that if the GNSO wants to make some comment on this, certainly the council and the whole community will be able to make, will have time to comment on the final report that comes out on the 25th of May. But if you wish to insert a interim comment or an intermediate comment in between these two drafts, it would have to be done rather quickly. And the only advice I have coming from Donna and perhaps the GAC is, if you intend to do this, I would send a note, you know, maybe from the chair saying, signaling the intent to send a comment, and then getting that together fairly shortly.
Yeah, no, and definitely if the conversation today goes in that direction, that would certainly make sense. One of the things I wanted to confirm with you, while you were offline, we basically covered, actually Chuck quite succinctly, in terms of explaining what it was the GAC wanted at the second level, basically was stating that they wanted at the second level the same thing that they were getting at the first level, and that would be enforced by RFP and contract. And is that a correct interpretation as far as you are concerned in terms of what GAC currently is asking for?
I think it's slightly different. My interpretation is that it's for country names only, using the 3166 list, and then only those translations of those names from the UN list, so only certain translations of those names, and it would be those names precisely. So I'm not sure that that interpretation is correct, but my interpretation of it is narrower in that it only applies to the 3166-1 list and their UN listed translation. And then, secondly, there's a comment at the bottom that country names at the top level should be treated as CCTLDs and GTLDs. So I don't know if that's to be interpreted as, you know, there's no contract, no fee.
Right. Yeah, that was another question of whether that was just sort of a reserved list or whether that was actually they were granted those names. I guess I'll open the list for discussion and questions and comments. And basically, one is clarification questions, and two is I'd like to get opinions on whether the council wishes to do something. And if so, we need to figure out who is going to do it right quickly, because...
Avery, if you can put me in the list, please, Stefan.
Stefan, anyone else with
me? Tim, please.
Tim, anyone else?
It's Mike. I'm still begging for clarification on what exactly the GAC is asking for.
Okay.
And please add Chuck to the queue.
Chuck. Stefan and Tim, are your questions clarification questions?
No, not mine.
Do you mind if I put Mike's clarification question?
Absolutely not.
At the top of the list? Okay, Mike, go
That's
ahead.
Fine.
Please ask your question, and hopefully Kurt can answer.
I understand at the top level that basically country names and I think capital city names are essentially blocked unless the applicant has the permission of the relevant governmental entity. Am I correct so far?
That country names and 3166-2 names and three-letter abbreviations that are on the 3166 list and capital city names require approval of the relevant government.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's all way contrary to what the GMSO Council's recommendations were in the first place. But all right, so now at the second level, they want even more. What exactly do they want at the second level?
So Donna's not on the call, right? My interpretation is that they want, and I would read it carefully, because I know drafts of this document changed over the last days, but my understanding is they want, at the second level, the country name in the 3166-1 list and the country name listed in the, and I forget what the UN list is, but the UN list, and that UN list contains the country names in the six languages. And
so would those names be on a reserved list, Kurt?
I think those names would require the approval of the relevant government, the same as the top of the list.
Okay.
If I could jump in, this is Christina. I'm actually looking at the document now. They're asking for a reservation of those names, and I'm assuming that would be through a list.
Yeah, it basically becomes a virtual list, I believe, that those lists together constitute a reserve list that is contractually enforced, I believe. And there was also the one other issue was the question that says, must be reserved at the second level at no cost to the government of all new GTLDs. And so there was some question, you know, on what that meant, that they are reserved at no cost to the government. Does that mean it's just a reserve list, or does that mean they want something more in terms of those names? And that wasn't clear to me. Okay, I've got a list. So are you okay on the clarifications, Mike?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks. And I do recommend that everybody read it. It's fairly short. Okay, Stefan.
Thanks, Avery. Yeah, I read the letter when it came out with some alarm, I must admit. I think there's a lot to discuss there. The first thing is that I do think we ought to respond in some way. If the deadline is in 2 days, then it's going to make it very difficult to respond. It's a bank holiday in France tomorrow, so I certainly won't be able to help, although I'd like to. I don't know if anyone has the time, but I think it's overly short notice to respond, although I do think the GNSO Council should respond. I think we're seeing more and more requests or maybe even excuses to extend certain entities protection, to use the new GTLD program to extend certain entities protection in a way that really you could question. I mean, you could, you know, today in .com, anyone can register Paris.com or France.com, and it may not be France or Paris. Now, if those two geographic regions object, then they can possibly use one of the UDRP or dispute resolution procedures to do something about it. They may deserve more protection. I'm not arguing that they don't. I'm just worried that we're, with these requests coming in from both corporations, governments, and other entities, we're moving further and further away from the initial GNSO recommendations for the new GTLD program. So, yes, I do think we should respond. I think the GAC letter is a clear request to get total protection for any ISO listed name at the first and second level. And, you know, if we go there, then trademark owners are justified in asking for exactly the same thing, and maybe they're justified in getting it, but it's certainly something that we ought to, it's a discussion that we ought to be involved in.
Okay, thank you. I assume that if there's a general agreement that we're going to write such a letter, you'll want to participate in it.
I would love to, unless it happens tomorrow.
I don't think there's a deadline like that, is there?
No, there's
a short
not
deadline.
A deadline. It was basically any comment that they were going to fold in, I heard something like they needed it 2 weeks before. So if their thing has to be on the 25th, then comments need to be on the 10th. But I'm sure I can send a note to Donna if the council says, saying, hey, you know, how about midweek next week? And you know, just get an extension and figure out how much time we need. But let's get to that at the end if more people think we should respond.
You know, if we can work on that next week, then I'm happy to take the lead on that.
Okay, great. Tim?
My question's been answered, so.
Okay, thank you. Mike, we already covered it. Chuck?
Yes, you know, I definitely think that we need to prepare a response, and I'm not volunteering to be on that. I'm glad that I appreciate Stefan volunteering to take the lead on that. I think it's really important for because the issues are so important to the whole GTLD process and the GNSO environment in general.
É, Praia de Botafogo.
Somebody needs to mute themselves.
Yeah. The one of the things is I think there's a reasonable chance that this would be a topic of discussion with our meeting with the GAC and
sorry, folks, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, it's Carlos. Sorry, I was in the mute. Sorry about that.
Okay.
And so, besides the value of just making our case as a GNSO, and I think we're probably fairly much on the same page as a council on this. We'll see. But I think that documenting our position on this and citing a lot of good examples would be very valuable going into the meeting with the GAC in Sydney. And it would also give them, some background in terms of where we're coming from. So I think that would facilitate good, healthy discussion there.
Okay, and in fact, this is at the moment, this will come up later in the meeting, this is at the moment the focal topic for our joint meeting. Does anyone else wish to be in the queue? Does anyone object to us working on such a response letter? Okay, good. So
Ari, it's Christina. I have a clarifying question.
Certainly, Christina.
Will that letter come... I'm just trying to get a better handle as to that letter would be identified as coming from whom and being...
Okay, yeah, I was going to get to that next. So if we're doing a letter from the council, and obviously we don't have another meeting until June, what we need to do is follow the procedure that we followed in the past, which would be that the team of Stefan and whoever else wants to work with him on this, and hopefully he's not alone, though it sometimes happens that one is alone, one can speak to Edmund, puts out a letter, and then I call for a 24 or 48-hour review, and then basically, and I'll document this in the note, and that basically if there is discussion, we basically decide on wording from the council if we get a 24-hour period with no more substantive changes or comments.
Aubrey, just one point of clarification.
Yeah.
I think we do have one more meeting. Don't we have a meeting on the 28th of May, 3 weeks from now?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, sorry. My mistake. But still, that would be too late.
Would it?
I believe so. If they need to resubmit their response by the 25th.
The 25th of May. Okay.
Right.
If we want to work on this next week, then it would be too late.
Right.
They have,
I believe, the 25th of May is their deadline from the board.
Pode pedir para procurar por escola de direito.
But anyway, I mean, we can confirm all that, but I believe that that was a May deadline from the board.
Avery, may I suggest that I just ask, I send a short message to the council list asking for anyone who wants to, you know, provide input, and I'll bring all that together in a draft document, and then you can all comment on. I don't think, you know, there's any need to set up a drafting team or anything official like that.
Okay, and just should there be too many people and you start needing a list, ask for one.
Okay.
And so when do you believe that you can have this letter so that I can start the 48-hour period of us? Because I'm trying to get a date by which I will then tell Donna that we will have input.
Well, there's two ways of doing this. Either I work on a letter, on a draft letter during the weekend, which I intend to make as short as possible, and submit that to the council on Monday, and just, you know, then people comment on that. That may get the ball rolling. Or I ask for input and collate that on at the beginning of next week. It may be more efficient if I work on a draft and take it from there, however imperfect that draft might be.
Well, you said there was a bank holiday tomorrow, in fact, right?
Yeah, I'm off, so I, you know...
So that would give people a day to send you any initial input they would like to send you.
Except I won't get it until Monday.
Oh, you won't get it until Monday. I thought you said you were going to work on Monday.
I'm going to work, but I don't have internet access, thank God.
Understood. I was inconceivable to send you. Okay. Then, yes, I think, you know, people working off of your letter. So I will ask for a deadline that I will ask that I submit at the end of the week. And that gives us one or two days to churn on the list, and then one or two days to do the last call mechanism to see. Now, obviously, if we cannot reach a point where we've got something that was basically the way these things have worked in the past is that we go with essentially unanimity, that no one on the list is objecting any longer. You know, people may be just acquiescing, that's their business, but that no one objects to the letter in a substantive way for at least 24 hours, and at that point, then I consider it as, and send it as a letter from the council. Does that answer the question, Christina?
Yes, thank you.
And is that an okay process? We followed it several times, but if anyone objects to the process, please say. Okay, thanks. So we'll follow that. So, Stefan, you'll get a letter out on Monday. We'll churn it for a day or two. Then, if the churning is subsiding, I'll start a 48-hour call on it.
Okay.
With a 24-hour filing period meeting. We're done. And I'll write that up. It's always a confusing email. Okay. Anything else on this issue before we move on? And thank you very much, Stefan. Okay, item 6, the Who is Service Requirement motion. This motion has also been on the agenda for a while, was tabled. There were friendly suggestions, friendly amendments accepted both from council members and from staff discussion, and we had a certain amount of list discussion. So I'd like to open up the queue for any further discussion on this at this point.
This is Tim. I'd like in the queue.
Okay, Tim. Anyone else? Go ahead, Tim.
Okay, I'd like to express perhaps maybe in a better way, or at least verbally, my concerns about this. And again, it's mostly about the last sentence of that first resolve paragraph, where after not only the known deficiencies, it says, but include possible requirements that may be needed to support various policy initiatives that have been suggested in the past. And as what I've tried to articulate is that I think personally that the council is the best one to manage that getting done. It doesn't mean the councilors have to be the one to do it. But those policy initiatives are all things that we've talked about numerous times. They're spread out in numerous different documents all over the place. And it seems to me to be a little inefficient to ask staff to go pour through all these documents to try to pull this together when, in reality, the people sitting on the council and their constituencies could probably rattle this stuff off pretty quickly. And it seems to be the better, and I know we're all busy and we've got a lot going on too, but it still seems more efficient to me if that aspect of what we're asking for here is pulled together by the councils, by the constituencies that have suggested these initiatives or have pursued them for years and years. And that's what I was trying to get to, that part of this, I think, could be pulled together a lot more quickly and efficiently if the council was to manage that themselves instead of asking staff to go back and forth through documents. The other aspects of it I had suggested mainly be consulted with the SBAC because it would get more towards technical deficiencies and issues with IDNs, that kind of thing. The ALAC, the GAC, the CCNSO may have some input into that, perhaps. But I guess my major concern is that we try to do this the most efficient way possible, and that was the reason why I had suggested the amendment. And I still feel that way. I don't know where we're at as far as, any options here to still change that, but
I guess I should respond as the one that's been discussing it. I feel almost 180 degrees on that particular issue. My concern is that if we go into a council, bring all your past suggestions for who is service, we end up basically getting back into the policy issue at this point, and what I'm hoping can be gathered is data on of these things that people talked about in the past, and I'm sure that actually finding most of them from the who is work is not the biggest problem for the staff, although they could have responded and could still respond otherwise, and that having them do a text search of what things we said in the past and give us a systems-level view of what it would mean to do any of these things so that when we next consider them, we have some of that system-level data is actually the more effective. Now, in terms of changing it, so that's why I wasn't really willing to accept that as a friendly amendment, but we could certainly frame an amendment that could be voted on before this. I mean, it's not, it's still worth doing. I don't know that it's extra work that the council has any bandwidth for at the moment, going back and trying to rethink these things. And I think that's what would happen. People wouldn't just dig up their own documents. They would rethink it in the constituency, and it would become a policy exercise as opposed to a system analysis exercise based on, past policy initiatives.
I had kind of envisioned it, I guess, is that, the counselors are, become aware that we need to gather this, past policy initiatives that have been suggested that may need to be considered a certain amount of time, it could be days or maybe a week, I can't you know, say exactly what everyone feels would be the best time, but it seems to me days or a week or something would work to respond if they're interested with what they feel those things are. Those could just basically be compiled. I don't think we need to get into discussions or debates. Those could just be compiled and provided to the staff. And hopefully, you know, we're all adult professionals and that we're not going to try to take advantage of the situation.
How about
this, you know, that could be done fairly quickly, I think.
Under the resolved, if I go, the GNSO Council requests the policy staff with the assistance of technical staff and GNSO Council members as required. And so if they want to come and ask questions and if we want to send stuff, that helps, but we don't make it a council process. Would that be a sort of halfway that would work?
That's certainly better, I guess, yeah.
It's Liz. Could I get in the queue?
Yes, please, Liz.
Thanks. You know, I appreciate very much, I think, Aubrey, you have a vision of this as an inventory, if you will, and correct me if I'm wrong, of, you know, kind of potential technical requirements that staff could amalgamate, if you will, in a neutral way, kind of a comprehensive list of the possible service requirements that have been discussed over the years. You know, I don't have the technical background to think about this at the system level data way that I think you do and you are, which is why I appreciate that, you know, we would need to consult with technical people to get it to that level. I think to the degree that I'm concerned, it probably is less the challenge of weeding through the list of possible things and more the challenge of how inextricably linked, or at least my knee-jerk reaction is, between potential technical requirements and policy questions. So it's the neutrality and the assumptions. It's very open-ended, so we would need to kind of be exhaustive or as exhaustive as possible. A lot has been discussed over the years and debated hotly over the years, and in the absence of guidance, there could be quite an infinite is too strong, way too strong, but a significant number of possible options at the data set level that I think is difficult to do exhaustively and neutrally because I see this inextricable linkage. But that may be me. I think having the council's guidance as to what is in the realm of reason here that should be identified, or the kinds of things, or the way in which it should be expressed, is not intuitively obvious to me and would need some guidance. That's
okay.
Where I think my concern is in.
So does that, and with the assistance of technical staff and GNSO Council as required, help in your issue at all?
It does, but I think what I would find even more helpful is just an initial starting point from the council, or an initial discussion where additional guidance is provided at more of a micro level, where you know, we just get started on the right foot.
That makes it a policy discussion, which was not what I was
right. Right.
So I guess I guess what we're saying is that you don't believe the staff could do this as it's currently written.
We would try, and we would.
But I mean, if I'm understanding, you're basically saying as it's currently written, you don't see it as a task that staff could reasonably and safely take on.
Well, let me say, I just have reservations, Aubrey. I don't want to say we can't. I think I talked to Dave, and I would need more technical guidance to be sure I could navigate these waters the right way. And I would need feedback from the council in the, you know, event that what we provided wasn't neutral, about what is a way to do it neutrally. So I guess, no, I think I would need council direction, more council direction than...
Okay, but I guess at the moment... unless anyone objects, I'll just table this for now.
I'll
come back to it someday.
Could I get in the queue?
Certainly, sure.
This is another case where I think we're making it more complicated than it needs to be, but maybe that's my misunderstanding. First of all, I don't think that we're talking about compiling technical requirements in a formal sense of the word of engineering requirements or system requirements, but rather the what is needed, what's missing in the existing protocol, and what's needed for if a new one was to be adopted. And I mentioned this before, but the CRISP working group and the work that they did actually did a first cut at that. I mean, in designing the IRIS protocol, what they did is they tried to identify all the kind of things that might be needed. I'm not saying they are, but they might be needed to allow flexibility in terms of the various needs of the protocol. So, to me, Liz, that's a very good starting point.
Well, I actually read it myself, and that caused me even more anxiety, to be honest. But again, I'm not a systems expert. So
again, we're not looking for.
I understand. I just had trouble even interpreting what it was saying, Chuck, to be candid. I've got others supporting me on this, and I'm happy to bring in experts. But that added to my concern about the level at which we would need to speak to this was my review.
But that's exactly why we said, with the assistance of technical staff and now possibly adding, GNSO council members as well, that was understood from the beginning.
Yeah,
so anyway, okay, Aubrey, I just wanted to make those points.
I understand, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to block progress at all. I'm actually just trying to be somewhat realistic about, we can take this on, and I so appreciate the council's flexibility in terms of time frame, and we can continue the dialogue using the council as a guide when we need it, and we can come back around to this. There's also the IRIS issue in the transfers piece, so that's why I'm hedging to be insistent that we can't do it. It's just that I really am sensitive to the limitations the kind of expertise we'll need. So please understand that's where I'm coming from.
And one more comment, Aubrey. I think we're not being good stewards if we just keep putting this particular thing off.
No, that's why I ended up writing the motion. But
I understand.
But if we are in a situation where the staff was saying that really this wasn't a task that they felt comfortable taking on, then there would be no point in having a motion where we ask them to take it on. I've added the, and to say that I'd like to ask if there's, I guess, an objection to taking a vote on it. I have added the, and GNSO council members as required, and I just saved it. And is there anyone else that would like to talk on the queue at this point? Is there any objection to taking a vote on this at this point? Does the vote need to be polled individual members, or is it okay to take a voice vote? Any objection to a voice vote? Okay, hearing no objection to a voice vote, all those in favor of accepting the motion on producing the requirements for who is service tools and amend from the friendly amendment, Tim from staff, and the amendment made during this meeting. All those in favor of accepting that, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
Okay.
Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. So the motion does pass, and I'm definitely available to the policy staff as they put this together, and anyone else that would like to volunteer to be helpful. Might be worth, putting something together so that we can sort of advise as necessary.
Yes, Ms. Tim, I'll certainly volunteer and provide whatever assistance I can.
So perhaps we can, make a small little team of people that are resources for staff as they proceed.
And you should maybe put out a call to the constituencies, because there's probably one or two members in the BC that would like to participate.
Okay, that'd be great. Okay. And now we are at the prep for Sydney. We've just started the work on that. Let me go back to that. So we've got
I just basically wanted to quickly go through the days. I need to add the May 28th meeting to our schedule. That's why I was being confused. So we have the weekend meetings planned as normal. At the moment, we're working with the PPSD and the OSD work teams to find out who wants to do when. Ah, Glenn is doing this.
Sim, tudo bom. Estou ocupado agora.
Somebody needs to mute.
Ah, okay, obrigado.
Also, various PDP working groups have been asked if they want to mute. And various of the council design drafting teams, if they want to meet, they should speak up. Also, we want to include sessions on progress on resolution of the overarching issues on new GTLDs, especially the IRT report, but anything else planned, probably that there needs to be a discussion on the geographical names at first and second levels and other ongoing new GTLD activity. There won't be a new report there, but there will be various updates on what's happening, and we're in the process now of trying to juggle all the Glenn is in the process of trying to juggle all the various schedules and find out who's available when in terms of the staff to figure out how these meetings split across Saturday and Sunday. So Saturday agenda item has the list of topics, but they'll be split over the 2 days.
Avery?
Yes.
This is Tony Harris. I'm sorry to break in. But I think that the implementation recommendation team document really deserves quite a bit of time of our meeting. I hope it won't be compressed into 30 minutes or something like that.
Okay, certainly. Yeah, well, and will we review the status? So this is the IRT report you're speaking of?
Yes.
Right. Okay, yeah, no, definitely. In fact, was hoping on that one to ask both a staff and a member of that committee to, that team to speak on it and to be there for consultation. And definitely.
That would be very helpful, yes.
Wasn't planning for just a 30-hour slot. I mean, 30-minute, 30-hour, no, a 30-minute slot. But thank you for the note.
Aubrey, this is Kurt.
Yes, Kurt.
Do you want to contact the chair of the IRT yourself, or would you prefer to have a staff member do it?
Actually, having a staff member do it and having the staff member work with Glenn to make sure that we can coordinate a time that's both good for the staff member and that person would be fine. I don't need to contact somebody else.
Okay, great. I'll do that.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so on Sunday, we also have the joint GNSO-GAC meeting, and as I say, the topic has been pretty much agreed that it would be the geographical names at first and second level, understanding GAC perspective, perhaps understanding our perspective. There's the board policy staff council dinner. I have not started or gotten very far into thinking about topics, haven't gotten very far. What seemed to work well last time is that various council members think there's a good topic, send it to the list, and I'll use the doodle tool to see which one has the strongest interest, and then perhaps if two of them are close, we come up with the dinner topic, dessert topic split again. So if people have topics that they think should be covered, please send them in, and you know, we can figure out which one should be the one.
Aubrey, it's Christina. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's very difficult for me to hear you.
Sorry.
That's true for everyone, and I know from having listened to the recording of the last meeting, there were some people that I basically just couldn't hear.
Okay, sorry. My microphone keeps slipping. Is this better?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. On I hear an echo now. On the Monday, there is a joint CCNSO-GNSO lunch meeting. We have not set a topic yet. Probably be interesting in talking about their PDP process. But then there's an AXO meeting for Monday. The topic is still being worked on. The proposal proposal for the topic is in the meeting there, and it concerns the roles and responsibilities of volunteers and staff and the relationship between board and the AXOs and such. And as I say, it won't be exactly what was proposed there, but that's going to be the general topic. There will only be one AXO meeting. It will be a two to two and a half hour. There will be, I forget exactly what the timing is. There will be open mic time so that there'll be a chance for people to speak during it. I'm not sure whether, and I think it's still being discussed, whether all the open mic will be at one point in the meeting or whether it will be at various points during the meeting. And the notes of the AXO meeting will be put on the website, and a comment period or a comment possibility will be opened up to those who didn't get to speak or those who prefer to speak in writing as opposed to microphone, or who weren't there can add their comments to the discussion. So that's basically the state of that discussion at the moment. I don't know if there are any questions on that. The agenda for the public meeting is still totally sketchy. Normally, we'd cover three issues, have been covering that file. I'm not quite sure what the issues we're going to be ready to discuss are, so this is a good time. I'm starting to look into that. So if council members, if people doing working teams or work groups believe that their issue is ready for, you know, possibly vote, but certainly the open discussion, then we have to figure. I mean, the sets of teams that we're choosing from issues is not that large, but I just haven't slotted them in yet. There'll be a GNSO improvements and restructuring session where the PPSC and OSC activities of the various teams, update on constituency recertification, update on stakeholder group charters, basically also an update on the updated schedule, because as we'll probably talk a little later, you know, we're going to not be keeping things as was the original schedule, so there should be. And then, of course, the regular open mic. And then the other meeting that's listed is the follow-up meeting on Thursday. And no agenda for that yet. So that's the schedule, fairly regular, normal blocking of times. So we're going to proceed over the next couple weeks, and please, you know, give your input on topics and issues that should be covered in the various meetings. Any questions or issues on that now?
Yeah, I have a question, Avery.
Certainly.
This is Tony Harris.
Yes.
The Thursday follow-up meeting, I'm sort of trying to get my my background in order with everything that's going on. That would probably, by my understanding, involve the new seated council and not the existing one. Is that correct?
I don't believe so. In that, I do not believe, and this is something that we'll talk about later in the meeting when we're talking about the restructuring stuff, I do not believe, and perhaps that's not final yet, but I'm not so sure that the new council will be seated at this meeting.
Well, I thought that was a sort of a proclamation that had to be fulfilled come, you know, whatever happened, brimstone, fire, whatever.
I have a feeling that I'm not sure that that's the case, but we'll talk about that a little later, because at the moment I certainly don't have an answer to that one. If the new council was seated at the meeting, yes, that would be the case, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Although it's an open meeting, so of course everyone would be there, and we don't vote at the meeting, so I'm not sure indeed to what extent it would make a difference, other than if somebody didn't want to attend. And
well, it could affect our travel arrangements if it's not an obligation.
I understand. Okay, so that's anything else on the upcoming schedule? As I say, we're working on it, and definitely input is welcome. Okay, going back to the agenda then, for the status update.
And Aubrey, for the board update, Denise sent an email that she would not be able to make it, but she will be sending a board update via email later today.
Okay.
She actually has sent it already this morning. There's three things she's updating or highlighting in particular, and she provides more detail.
I don't see it yet, but
okay.
That's good to know.
Did you want to talk to it, Liz, or did you just want to?
Well, I can read the highlights of what...
That would probably be good, and then if there's any immediate questions that can be sent as feedback, obviously you would probably not be able to answer them, but
right.
If no one could, they could be sent back to
us. Of course. So she provides the preliminary report, or the link to the preliminary report of the board's 23 April meeting. And there are three things that were discussed of particular interest to the GNSO, an update on the implementation efforts and restructuring, and the staff provided an update on GNSO improvements and the work remaining prior to June 2009 implementation timeline. And they discussed specific issues related to the outstanding petitions and charters of new stakeholder groups and potential amendments of those documents, as well as petitions and charters for new constituency groups and anticipated receipt of further petitions. And staff was directed to continue work towards implementation. No board action was taken. The board structural improvements committee will be discussing these issues at their 14 April 2009 meeting and may provide the board with recommended actions. On the RAA amendments, the board discussed the amendments and directed staff to send a letter to the U.S. Department of Commerce confirming the benefits of the new RAA prior to the board's final approval. That letter has been sent and is posted in the correspondence section of the website. The board is expected to act on the amendments at the next meeting, which is the 21st of May, and I think this information was provided to the council by Bruce Tonkin on April 24th. And then the third area is the working group to review the structure of ICANN's present geographic regions. The board briefly discussed the proposed charter of the community-wide working group to review the structure of ICANN's present geographic regions, but the board deferred approval of the charter until their next meeting, the 21st of May meeting. And then she, Denise provides the full agenda for the board's 23 April meeting as well. And that's what's included in the email that's been posted just now.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone want to put any questions on the record that we would get feedback from Denise from later?
Just a suggestion that the email, Denise's email, be sent to the council list, not just posted.
Oh, it wasn't sent to the council list? I think
it
I received it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I think I just received it.
I didn't use the right terminology. It was sent to the council list. And also, someone's corrected me that I said the thickest meeting on 14 May. I think I said April, but 14 May.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or issues for that can be taken back to the dean? Okay. Thank you very much, Liz, for going through that. Okay, the next is the CCNSO liaison update. Olga is not here. She sent in a message, and basically the working group issue is pending, and that she does not have information about due dates for sending names of GNSO representatives to the group. As mentioned before, she would like to volunteer to participate in this working group. We still need to resolve that issue, and perhaps we'll talk about it a little later.
And we need one more.
We need one more. No one has raised their hand to volunteer. We could also reach out to the constituencies, if there's someone from the constituencies. But I think we should accept Olga and have one, since we're not getting a lot of other volunteers. But is there anyone from the constituencies that someone would like to put forward for this effort? It's going to be a long-term effort, I expect. Well, I ask people to you know, think it through. Otherwise, I guess as a default, either vice chair or chair can
be better, you know, and I'm sort of interested, but I'd really prefer for it to be someone else. Plus, I'm not, don't have, I think it's going to, commitment's going to go beyond this year. But anyway. Any other questions or issues on that? In terms of the geographical region update, Zahid, would you like to give an update on that? Are you still here? Are you mute?
Yes, I am. I am, Avery. Can I skip that?
Excuse me?
Sorry, hello?
Hello. Yeah, basically, she sent in a couple words, but since you're also one of the representatives on that, I was asking if you wanted to give an update on the geographical regions working group.
I was wondering if I could skip that.
Oh, okay. Certainly. Then I'll read what she wrote. In relation to the GeoRegions Working Group, we had a conference call today and agreed as next step to share a document that defines different categories in relation with geographic regions, in relation with representation, operation, participation, and others that may arise. Also, Robert prepared a table with CCNSO and GNSO inputs in relation with the SO and the geographic regions. The document will be posted in the wiki for the working group for further updates and revision by constituencies if needed. Next conference call will be in 2 weeks, and a document with initial report for use of geographic regions should be issued before June. And I don't know, Zahid, if you had anything to add to it, but if you do, any questions that should be posted for Olga or Zahid on this? Okay.
Avery, this is Rob, if I can interject.
Certainly,
one thing,
Rob.
About that. As Olga indicated, the initial report timetable is still on track for June 12th, and that will be the initial report of the working group. So in terms of potential agenda items for Sydney, the council may want to have a placeholder for that. Again, the initial report will be more of a factual representation and a suggestion of potential issues that the working group will be considering, so it may merit some council discussion time in Sydney.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Rob while we're on the topic? Okay. Then moving on, the next thing was implementation recommendation team status update. The draft report has gone out. Is there anyone in the meeting who's prepared to give a status update? One of the council members who's also on the team?
This is Christina. I'm happy to.
Okay, please, Christina.
As Aubrey noted, the IRT released, in accordance with the board resolution, its draft report for public comment on April 24. That report identifies and puts forth recommendations in 5 areas: a uniform rapid suspension system, a IP clearinghouse, a globally protected marks list, along with various protections, not only for marks on that list, but also other marks at the second level, a watch service, post-delegation dispute resolution mechanism, and a recommended change in how the string similarity algorithm is used, or at least more specifically what happens after it's used. The report went out for a 30-day public comment period, but because the IRT is meeting, the IRT is having its final report due on May 24 and is meeting face-to-face Monday through Wednesday of next week in San Francisco, and I'll talk to that in a minute, the decision was made within the IRT that it was really important to us that we be able to talk about as much of the public comment as possible during our face-to-face meeting, and requested that public comments that folks wanted considered in connection with the final report, although we would, of course, read all of them, be submitted by May 6th. And that timing has created some concern. But, you know, realistically, there's really not a whole lot that we can do about that. We really only gave ourselves 2 business days to read through all the comments, and there are a significant number of comments. The IRT is meeting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in San Francisco, as I indicated, and on Monday, the entire day will be devoted to presentations from organizations that had participated and submitted public comments, particularly on this issue in on draft 1 and 2 of the GAG, and I believe, I don't know the number off the top of my head, I want to say it's 11 or 12 organizations were invited to make presentations. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, it's more like 17. And then we will spend Tuesday, Wednesday not only talking about those presentations as well as some other solutions that have been put forward, but also going over the public comment with the idea that we will in fact have our final report done on May 24, notwithstanding the fact that it's the Sunday Memorial Day weekend. I'm happy to take questions in a minute. I do want to kind of switch hats and go from IRT member to IPC member. And in particular, remember the IPC leadership. And I'm making the statement here because this is going to get to the broadest number of people, I think, rather than me trying to reach out to everybody individually. But I did want to let everyone know that the IPC leadership is aware that concerns have been expressed in various fora about the perceived lack of participation on the IRT by persons with knowledge, expertise, and experience in the area of consumer protection. And although several IRT members do, in fact, have an experience in consumer protection issues, it is true that the IRT does not include a representative of a consumer group or an individual who identified his or her primary area of knowledge, expertise, experience, as set forth in the board resolution, as being consumer protection for the simple reason that, frankly, we received no timely expression of interest and completed nomination form from anyone able to commit to the anticipated 15 business day time commitment. We did receive one, and only one, timely expression of interest and completed nomination form from a person with that expertise in the area. That person was unable to make the time commitment. That time commitment was, in fact, a threshold issue for participation in the IRT. When the IPC leadership was making decisions about who to send invitations to, folks who had made clear to us that for a variety of reasons that they would be unable to make the time commitment and in particular would be unable to attend the face-to-face meetings, we simply didn't invite them. And in fact, we withdrew an invitation to one person who said upon receiving the invitation that they couldn't attend the face-to-face meeting. Finally, I would also note that the IPC, through email messages sent by the president to the heads of the ACs and the constituencies on March 12th, identified a specially designated email address to which input could be provided. We've received virtually no input through that email system, so we're really relying on the public comment form. Anyway, I'm happy, to the extent that we have time on the agenda, to answer any questions that you all may have.
Are there any questions?
I have a question, but actually it's more for staff than for Christina. This is Tony Harris.
Okay, yes, Tony, go ahead.
Perhaps somebody can enlighten me. I've seen this report from the IRT. A lot of work has obviously gone into it. And I'm wondering if somebody could tell me, since I assume there will be a third version of the guidebook in some stage of preparation, when that third version will be released. Will it be in time for the Sydney meeting? It doesn't look like it, or is there any idea when it will be available?
So Aubrey, I can answer that.
Please do.
On topic.
Slightly askew, but that's fine.
Okay. There's not going to be a third version of the applicant guidebook printed before Sydney. The reason for that is that this issue that we're discussing here, trademark issues, and some other overarching issues, discussions will not be completed by that time. And that was kind of already understood that, some reports on opportunities for malicious behavior and the DNS scaling study would not be done in time for Sydney. So it was thought that publication of a guidebook that had substantial changes to it but did not address the four overarching issues would just give rise to criticism that people who made comments were not listened to in this version of the guidebook. So instead, in order to furnish enough information for a significant discussion in Sydney, ICANN is going to publish the comment analysis, very similar to what was done last time, hopefully a little bit more smoothly. an internal process, but do that. And then as those comments and analyses indicate that changes should be made in the guidebook, we'll also take excerpts or sections of the guidebook and redline those. So we won't publish a new version of the guidebook in Sydney, but on a dozen or so topics, we'll publish red lines of sections in order to facilitate conversation, make sure there's a lot to talk about in the Sydney meeting.
Right, and those are probably the things that we'll cover when you come to visit us on the weekend.
Yes, and then finally, we see the closure of the IRT issue as the IRT final report will be issued prior to Sydney, and there's others who have sort of self-formed groups or have input into this too. And so, the IRT input's very important, and in a sense, is sort of the first among equals in the reports ICANN and the community is receiving about how to address trademark issues and potential solutions. And so, what would follow out of that would be a series of consultations where we take the IRT input and other input and talk and attempt to get some sort of consensus or agreement on the next model of guidebook and how to incorporate those suggested solutions. So I see the Sydney meeting, the Wednesday afternoon meeting, as being the first one of those consultation sessions where we take the IRT and other input and have a discussion about including them in the applicant guidebook. And then after Sydney, we see at least two more consultations, maybe more, one in North America and one in Europe, at least, similar to discussions to, complete the work of the IRT and and other groups and put that in a form that's in the guidebook. And then the timing going forward then would be the guidebook. You know, we close that work, that consultation work out in July, and publish the new guidebook in early September, say, and then the public comment period for that would close after, right after the Seoul meeting, which would allow us to then publish, the final version of the guidebook, I think.
Kurt, can I ask a question? Maybe I missed it when you were speaking. Is there a board decision point along the way in this IRT and other overarching issues before things go in the guidebook, or are they going directly from these committees to the guidebook?
Yeah, so it goes from there. So the IRT committee work will be then discussed publicly.
Yeah.
So
I got that part.
Okay, so there's opportunity to comment there. And the results of that public discussion will result in changes to the guidebook, which will also be available for public discussion. The board along the way has discussions, and you get a sense from the board about what their thinking is, but the formal approval by the board will be of the, final version of the guidebook. So the board will approve the final version of the guidebook, I think, before it's posted.
I see. So they're not making decisions on the recommendations themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, and I'd be really, this being recorded, so I want to be very careful about it because the board is very involved in the discussion, and they certainly give a sense of direction in many of these cases, but there's not formal resolution about them because it's really for public discussion at this stage of the game.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on the IRT status?
Well, if I could just, Stefan here, just ask Kurt to clarify. Did you just say that there would be a third version of the DAG that would come out around September time with a comment period closing after the Seoul meeting, and after that a final version of the guidebook which would come out before the end of the year? Is that correct? Thank you.
Any other issues, questions? Thank you, Christina. Thank you, Kurt. Okay, next item, 8.5, joint EXO effort. the Joint GNSO-CCNSO group to discuss coordination of timing for IDM-TLD. Chris and I are still talking about it. The CCNSO, as I understand it, has yet to discuss how we're going to set this up. So we've got a ways to go. We have the issue that we touched on briefly earlier, appointment of two GNSO Council representatives to the CCNSO PDP Working Group. I'm suggesting that we accept Olga, and does anyone object to accepting Olga's volunteering for this? And if not, then we need to find at least one, and we need to find one more person. Funny, in past groups we had too many people, and we had to get permission for alternates and for observers and such, and in this case, we've got no one. So, if people, have someone from your constituency who's very appropriate for this work and willing to sort of take it on as a long-term challenge, that would probably be a good thing, and I would suggest bringing the name to the council. Any questions?
So, Avery?
Yes?
Listen, is this for the IDM?
The CCNSO PDP Working Group.
I'm happy to bring my question. And I'm sorry, I probably missed it earlier.
Okay, great. Does anyone object to it, to our team being Edmund and Olga? Fantastic. I think we have a team. I will, craft a letter and send it off saying that we have a team. Thank you. Okay. And then the other one is the RAA with ALAC. The RAA hasn't been approved yet, the motion by the board, so we're still at the starting gate. We need to have some conversations between the group that has formed with the GNSO and I guess the group that is forming within ALAC. I need to take a step to have a conversation with Cheryl and perhaps others to see how we coordinate these two. But we need to come out with that single joint working process, as I understand it. So that's something that still needs work. And I understand that we have a list for a working team on this, for a drafting team. I guess we've got it at the moment. And so I'll involve that group in trying to figure out how we take this to the next step. Any issues or questions with that? Okay, on policy items. Chuck, can I ask you to take over the chair for a moment? I have to deal with something.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Be happy to do that. Okay, let's start off with the working groups. The Fast Flux Working Group, is there an update there?
Yeah, Chuck, it's Mike. Can I still be heard okay? I'm driving at the moment.
You sound pretty good, Mike.
All right. Very quick update. The group is continuing. We're having, I think, weekly meetings at the moment to address the public comments that were received in response to the initial report. We expect to have a final report done for council in advance of the Sydney meeting.
Thank you. Any questions on that? Okay, going on then to the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. Tim, are you our liaison there?
Actually, I am the liaison there.
Oh, you're also that one, okay.
Yeah, I think I might not be the liaison for Fast Flux anymore. It might be Aubrey, I'm not sure. But anyway, I am definitely the liaison for the RAP group. That group's meeting biweekly. We are working on definitions of what is registration abuse. That's taken up the bulk of our time so far, and we've also come up with a list of explosive types of abuses that the group will then go on to discuss in light of the agreed definition we come up with. I'm not sure if that was very clear, but bottom line, we're kind of hung up on trying to define what is within ICANN's scope, what is not, and then from there we'll go on to talk about specific types of abuse and how they might be addressed by changes in registration abuse policies.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Comments? Okay, going to the drafting teams then, the travel policy drafting team. And that's also listed there, a travel database for Sydney. Olga's not on the call today. Someone else give us an update there.
This is Tim Chuck.
Go ahead.
I believe where we're at is that we've accepted how we're going to split up the DNSO funds, and so at this point it's a matter of the constituencies submitting their requests to staff, and I believe instructions about that were sent out by Kevin Wilson a couple of weeks ago. But I'm not sure where that's at yet.
Sam, that's with regard to...
Who all has actually submitted those requests.
Sam, that's with regard to the Sydney travel, right?
Yes.
Has there been any progress on a longer-term travel policy, or is that still not started?
Yeah, that still hasn't started.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any questions or comments? IDN GTLD Fast Track, Edmund?
On the mailing list, we have put together sort of a draft charter for if we are going to create this.
You're breaking up a little bit, Edmund.
Sorry. It followed a lot along the lines of the IDN. The purpose and the scope and some of the items that need to be addressed if the group is formed and discussions start, and the process for development.
Edmund, I'm sorry, but I don't know if everybody else is having the same problem, but more of your words are not being heard than are being heard, so there appears to be a bad connection here.
Yeah, I was having the same problem.
I can say that having participated on that list, let me try and say a couple things real briefly. I can't do as good a job as Edmund, but there has been quite a bit of work on a draft charter if we pursue this, and there's quite a variety of people participating on the email list. So I don't know, Edmund, if you want to try to add anything to that. Not sure the connection will allow, but...
Let's try. We're trying to get a call together with and which hopefully could be displayed at the council list.
Yeah, it's not working.
Right. Well, what I think I understood is that the group is trying to get a call together, and I think that fairly soon, if I understand Edmund's intentions and the progress of the list, that there will be something shortly to float on the council list and start bringing the discussion to the council. Is that correct, Edmund? Oh, you can't even get it's breaking up.
Does it go through? Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Okay,
yes.
Great.
It's all yours, Aubrey.
Okay, thank you. So, having covered that, the next is GNSO Improvement Work Team. So, is there a report? Is it either a staff person want to report on what's going on, or someone from one of the teams want to report on the PPSC? And any of his work team?
It's Liz. I can.
Okay, thank you. Please.
Both the PPSC Policy Development Process Work Team is skipping a week but meeting weekly and focusing on, at the moment, on the initial stages of sort of pre-PDP work, who can initiate an issues report, what the contours of an issues reporter, that pre-PDP scoping process should really entail, drilling down and making progress at those initial stages. On the other work team, which is the working group's work team, divided briefly into sub-teams to look at working group guidelines and the charters, whether charters could be standardized. They are meeting as a larger group this week and are looking at continuing to refine those concepts at the early stages.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? I think it's impressive to see the amount of work that's going on, so I think it's great. On the OSC side, who would like to...
I'll do that, Aubrey,
okay,
as chair of the OSC. All three work teams are holding biweekly meetings, and all three have approved their final charters and sent them to the OSC. The GNSO ops team has had three meetings. Their near-term work items include development of high-level principles and a statement and statement of interest documents. Ray Fassett chairs that. The GNSO constituency and stakeholder group work team it has gathered information regarding existing constituency operations, their charters, et cetera, and proposed stakeholder group operations. And small teams have been formed to focus on specific tasks. The again, this particular team is obviously going to be highly dependent on good input from constituencies and pending stakeholder groups. So the participation from those groups are really critical. So please encourage your representatives on that team to be as active as possible. And then the communications work team has divided into four specific teams dealing with GNSO website requirements, document management, soliciting meaningful feedback, and GNSO board communications. The last one is kind of an optional one right now. They're not sure whether they're going to pursue that. And Mason Cole is chair of that. I forgot to mention Olga Cavelli is chair of the constituency stakeholder group team. That's a quick overview.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on any of that? Okay, sounds like these things are moving on. One of the things we probably need to figure out before not too long is what kind of end schedules we can expect to see for various things coming out so that we start to have an idea in terms of when various proposals will be coming to the council and will need discussion and approval.
Yeah, Avery, Stefan here. So I was trying to get in there before when you asked if there were any questions.
Oh, okay,
I was on mute.
Go ahead.
I missed whether Chuck mentioned in his report on both the OSC and the PPSC the discussion initiated by Adrian on the organization of our meetings, and I think it was your suggestion that one of those two committees take up that work or include it in the work that they're doing.
Stefan, I forwarded that recommendation to Ray Fassett, who's chair of the GNSO operations work team. So they haven't focused on it yet, but because I don't think they've had a meeting since I did that. But I'm assuming that they will take that up.
Okay, thanks, Chuck.
Okay, thank you. Okay, going on to the restructuring group. Now, the one thing that's been listed is the status of the bylaw discussion, but there's also all the other long list of items that we need to deal with that Rob is pending. I'll ask him to comment on that and board interactions in a second. In terms of the status of the bylaw discussions, I don't know, you know, how many people from this list are actually paying attention to the restructuring list, so I think you're all on it. But basically, we did have one phone call. We are moving ahead on it. We have the liaison from the board, what is it, Strategic Improvements Committee? No, Structural Improvements Committee. Got to remember what these letters stand for. Who is participating on the list and listening in on the phone call, who will be taking in the questions that we're posing for the board that have come up in some issues, and will be able to, you know, just discuss with the SIC the general status of where things are.
So I'm really quite happy that he's participating with us and that we have a liaison with the SIC on this. Questions that came out of the last phone call were put on the list, both as a list of questions and as individual questions. One note that went out today was to ask anybody that has a point to make on any of these questions to try and get it made by the end of the weekend, so that Raimundo will have as full a picture going forward of where we're at as possible, a snapshot. So that's where that is. We're trying to schedule another meeting for next week, where hopefully we'll get through the rest of the issues and be able to build the second set of questions. And then we've got to work our way to resolving these questions so that this group can bring to the council, as a council, the set of bylaws that we would recommend to the board for change. And we'll be able to, we'll have to discuss at a later time whether we're doing that as one package of amendment changes, doing in a couple sections, or how we're doing it. That's still questions that we haven't gotten to yet. So I think that covers that. Are there any questions on that? No. Okay, going.
Yep, sorry.
Oh, okay,
again.
Yes.
I'm still having trouble with my phone.
With the muting.
Yeah.
Takes too long, yeah.
Sorry?
The star, six star, whatever, takes too long.
Oh, no, it's just a button on mine, but anyway. Can I just say that, you know, since following on from our meeting that we had earlier on in the week about the list of questions that we have, I'm finding it very, very difficult to manage that. I don't know how other people are finding it, but we started having a list of a summary of the questions from Margie, and then both Chuck and yourself, I think, responded to them, Milton as well, and I'm already lost. I wondered if it might not be simpler just to work, instead of working email by email on each question, just to work on a full list of questions.
Well, I put the questions out both in a full list of questions.
Oh, did you? I missed that.
As a separate one, so I did put them out both ways. And I believe what we're working from at the moment is the set of proposed changes as have been amended twice, and then the sets of questions that I extracted from that meeting. And those are the two things that we're working at. And I put the questions out both as one full, you know, mail with all the questions in it, and for anyone that wanted to work on it thread-wise, each question individually is an email.
Aubrey, could I comment?
Sure.
Yeah, Stefan, I personally like the smaller threads, and I've chosen some to respond to and some I didn't. But I think it's going to be tough whichever way we do it, but if you have, there's so many questions and so many issues that already have created some controversy that if we try and follow a track with all of them in the same thread, for me it becomes too complicated, but that's probably going to vary by individual.
Yeah, you're probably right there, Chuck. I'm just thinking that, you know, we've got a meeting next week, and one of the aims that we set for ourselves was to have an answer for the questions that we got. I mean, we did half of the document in our first meeting, or thereabouts. So I'm not sure we're going to get to that.
Well,
I think in our meeting next week, Aubrey, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're going to pick up where we left off and try and finish covering all the issues first before we go to resolution.
Right. What we're trying to do at the moment is just get both the questions and all the context and comments that people have on them set down in the e-list, so that we're sure that what needs to be said, not where it ends up in discussions, but what people need to say about the various issues is there, is visible, and can be seen and discussed. The next meeting was to go through the rest of the list, and then to go back through the list, having seen the questions, having seen the comments, having perhaps gotten some answers from the board, SIC, and then try and resolve and close on each of them. So we'll be making several passes through it.
Okay.
And this is the first pass through. And basically, my way of looking at it is We'll keep making passes through it, you know, deciding what can be decided at that point, eliminating that from the list so the list is shorter the next time we have to go through.
And Aubrey, this might be a good time to come back to Tony Harris's point that he raised early in the meeting, and that is that these bylaws changes need to be in place before the the bicameral council is seated, and that's why it's virtually impossible to seat the council in June.
And that was, and that's a good lead into what I was going to ask Rob about the other things, and the, I guess there's been a, I don't know whether it's a request to the board or a recommendation or just a comment to the board about the likelihood of us being done by June, and Rob or whoever has that token.
Hi, Aubrey. Thank you. As you may have noted in Denise's report to you all that she circulated to the list, that's an item that's going to be prime agenda material for the SIC at their May 14 meeting. So they'll be discussing that next week. I think that you, Chuck, and Tony and others have appropriately noted the timing challenges just from a practical standpoint. In addition to the bylaws, as you all know, just from our own discussions within the restructuring drafting team, that some issues with respect to the stakeholder group charters, the fact that the registry stakeholder group just submitted a new revised proposal that will be going on public notice probably this week, and the fact that there are still efforts to bring together the two proponents of the NCSG charters all sort of dovetail to suggest that that June time frame will likely have to be adjusted.
Thank you. I had myself on mute.
Can we have a question on that as well, please?
Yes, please. Mike, anyone else want to be in a queue on questions on any of this with the restructuring? Mike, Christina, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
So, Rob, or I'm curious to hear any other counselors' thoughts on this, too. Isn't it true that, you know, before we can seat the new council with the bylaws changes, or in addition to the bylaws changes, we also have to have the new PDP figured out? Is this correct?
Can I comment on that, Aubrey?
Certainly. Go ahead, Chuck.
I don't think that's true, Mike. I don't think there's anything to prevent us from continuing to use the existing PDP in the meantime. In fact, I think we're going to have to. And even if, for example, and I'm not saying this is what the time with the board's going to approve, but let's say that we seat the bicameral council in Korea, even if the final PDP revisions weren't finished by then, we could go on and continue to use the existing PDP until such time that the new PDP is in place and part of the bylaws.
I guess I have to say I don't quite understand.
I don't think so, because the voting thresholds all change with bylaw changes to bicameral house.
I think
I don't see that.
Avery, could I comment at all?
I don't see that as a problem.
Yeah, well, I'll put you in the list down.
We can use the new voting threshold.
Can I be in the queue also? It's Margie.
Certainly, Margie. But okay, so I've got Mike, Chris, well, Mike already. Christina, and then Margie. Okay, Christina.
Rob, I don't know if you're the right person to answer this question, but is it your sense that we'll have some kind of definitive decision from the board as an outcome of that May 14 meeting? And the reason I'm asking is that, you know, as I think everybody on this call knows, the IPC is really kind of in limbo. We didn't have elections last November because we amended our bylaws to tie the election of new representatives to be simultaneous with the seating of the new council, et cetera. So in turn, none of us have requested travel support because we don't know who the councilors are going to be. And at a certain point, it's going to start to get awfully expensive to start sending people all over the world to Sydney. So, you know, we need some guidance, either to know that we're going to get a definitive statement from the board one way or the other on May 14, or I guess conversely, then, you know, we need to go back to Kevin and say, okay, what do you want us to do?
Go ahead, Rob. But one thing I would add, I think it would be difficult without having approved stakeholder groups and all of that yet to do much of anything.
Yeah, Christina, that's a very practical question that folks have been made aware of. The 14 May meeting is the Structural Improvements Committee. The board meeting is 21 May, so I would expect that at that meeting you would have definitiveness in the form of a board resolution.
Okay.
But I think there's also just a practical reality.
Well, yeah, because as a practical matter, if the resolution doesn't happen, even if the board approves it on May 21st, there's not enough time within the internal bylaws of the IPC to have an election.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that the IPC leadership needs to just decide who we're going to request travel support for, and even if in fact the new council is seated, we'll have to figure out what to do about the existing IPC rep.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Right. And in terms of just the practical, we don't have the bylaws yet. We don't have the approval of the stakeholder groups yet. Whether we actually need the PDP rules or not, which I think we probably do, but that's an item for discussion. Don't see how it can happen at this moment. I've been trying to push for it to happen, but at this point, just practicality seems to be, you know.
Okay. I'll let the leaders know, and then we'll get in touch with Kevin accordingly.
Yeah. And then hopefully the board will see that also. Any other comments on this?
I was in the queue.
Oh, sorry. I'm very sorry. I got lost. Alan.
Yeah, two comments. If I understand the timeline correctly, even if the board were to ignore any input from the GNSO and unilaterally pass bylaws, given the posting requirement for posting for public comment, I don't think they could approve them before the Friday meeting in Sydney at best. So I think that's simply the days don't add up. Regarding the PDP, I believe the current position is when those bylaws are changed to reorganize the GNSO, at the very least threshold numbers would have to be changed in the PDP process, but that's probably the only thing that's absolutely required.
Yeah, I think.
And then that I think is the current is the consensus of the working group right now. It certainly would be desirable, but not necessarily required.
And we're covering the thresholds in the bylaws changes that we're looking at.
That's right.
So, yeah, no, that's the part that needs to be done. And Margie?
I think you guys already covered it, but we did draft in the bylaws a transition section that dealt with just changing the threshold and then operating under the existing PDP rules under Annex A, with the idea that we would amend Annex A later after we went through all the work. So that's the way we've been operating up until this date.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to comment? Okay, is anyone have, I think it's at the end of the list, let me look at the agenda here. Don't miss something. Yep. Any other business anyone have? We're 11 minutes over, and I thank you for your patience. That was almost positive we did on time today. So, no other business? Thank you all. See you on the list.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.